All right, this is Joe Green, and I am talking with Akiro Otsuka. And forgive me, did I pronounce that correctly?
That was perfect, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Well, terrific, and it is wonderful. Welcome. It's wonderful to have you with us today, and I was so excited to be able to talk with you, and we were very excited this past week to receive this project titled Epilogue, a tribute to John Duffy. And this has been a kind of a baby of yours, a project for quite some time, has it not?
Yes, sir. It took me and my co-producer 15 years.
Well,
we started out, you know, just talking about it, and we started recording about 4 or 5 months later. But it's been a lot of fun.
Well, I'm sure it has, and kind of a labor of love. Let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit now. Folks get the album. They're going to get some very interesting liner notes. But tell us right now how you came to know John Duffy.
I was born in Japan, raised in Japan, started playing bluegrass like in 63. I formed a group called Bluegrass 45 in 1967. In 1970, we were discovered by Dick Freeland, who owned Rebel Records. He came to Japan and saw us and said, "Hey, you guys want to come to the States and tour?" And we said, "Sure." And he was a good friend of John Duffy. So when we arrived at his house, this is June of 1971, next morning, Dick said, "Hey, John and Nancy Duffy are coming for dinner." I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Because he knew I was a big fan of John, but John and Nancy really showed up, and I'm like, wow. And we had a jam session that night, and, you know, probably he couldn't believe these five Japanese boys knew everything that he had recorded with the Company Gentlemen.
Right.
So ever since that day, we are good friends.
Well, and folks may not be aware of, you know, in the 60s that there was a bluegrass scene in Japan. How big was it back then?
It was not big, but the people who knew or loved bluegrass knew where to go. There was a little coffee shop in Kobe called Lost City, and that's where we hang out starting from mid-60s. And everybody knew that's where you can go and listen to bluegrass.
Well, I'm sure folks were surprised when you and your band came to America. And I noticed it was kind of funny in the liner notes how you talked about, you know, you could play every song that he'd done, but you noted in your in your liner notes maybe your English wasn't so good back then.
That is correct.
But, no, you know, when it's bluegrass music, I don't think folks really cared. It's good music, right?
Yes, and I think we played well enough, and we knew all the songs we were supposed to do, but also we had our own arrangement of folk songs, rock songs, classical piece like Mozart, mm-hmm. and we did Dave Brubeck's Take Five, you know, and that freaked some people out, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I felt like maybe they were freaked out this past year or so when Ned Lubrecki came out with his version of Take Five.
He's got a nice version of that. And also he has another tune in 5/4, you know, it's a unique time signature.
Right. Well, this album, Epilogue, it's a tribute album, of course, a labor of love for you. It's, as you mentioned earlier, been in the making for quite a long time. What was the inspiration? How did you come about the idea of putting this together?
Dick Freeland, as I mentioned, he owned the Rebel Records.
Right.
And his son, Ronnie Freeland, I met him when they came to Japan. He was 11 years old. And when I moved to the States, I didn't have many friends. So, you know, I used to hang out with Ronnie, and he ended up becoming a great recording engineer. And he had done like Longview and Seldom Seen and Ralph Stanley and Joe Shuffler and all that. one year coming back from IBMA in Louisville, Ronnie just tells me, hey, we got to do this album. I'm like, which one? He goes, John Duffy Tribute Album. I said, oh, that sounds like a great idea. So it was his idea, and I don't know why he came up with that idea. I don't know.
Clearly a big fan like you were of John, I'm sure.
Yes. Freeland and Duffy family both were close to each other. I mean, Ronnie used to go to the studio with his father, Dick, and watch Duffy record or watch Ralph Stanley record.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came to Japan in 1970, we would ask many questions to Dick. And then sometimes Dick would go, hey, Ronnie, who was that playing fiddle? Ronnie knew it better than Dick did.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit from your friendship with John Duffy. Tell us a bit how he was. I'm sure that, you know, I never had much chance to be around him, and I'm sure listeners, some of them probably never got to be around him either. What was John like from your point of view?
John was one of the nicest people you ever meet. If you watch him just on stage, you don't get that impression. He was very charismatic and, you know, show off and, you know, over the edge. But say I went to his house to say watch Redskins game. Then he would go, have this seat. No, the other one is more comfortable. Can I get you Coke? 2 minutes later, can I fill it up? 5 minutes later, are you hungry? I mean, he cared. He was trying to make me feel so comfortable there. And I think that's the way he was to, like, band members. That's why they kept the same members for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very, very kind person.
You know, that takes me to the liner notes and some comments that Dudley Connell made about him, too, and how he treated the band.
Yes, yes. They always divided the pay,
mm-hmm.
you know, five ways.
Mm-hmm.
There was no question about it in John's mind because everybody was working together.
But I've always heard he was, you know, he was really focused, very serious about his music and about where it was going. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. And he left the Congelman in 1969, and I think it was business portion of music was really bugging him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They had a chance to get on Johnny Carson's show, but somebody who introduced them wanted kickback and all that, and John was like, no, I don't want to do that. And also, Gentleman was great, but they were not making that much money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just felt like he had to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And 2.5 years later, when he saw Mike Aldridge and John Starling and Ben Aldridge and Tom Gray, you know, hey, let's say this is going to be fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was the main thing for them.
What a career, though, to be the foundation and band, two bands that large. I mean, you know, that made such an impact on the music. It's quite a body of work.
Yes. I mean, both bands got into Bluegrass Hall of Fame. You know?
Right. He's in there twice, of course, you know, as a member of both bands. And you took me to 1971 there, you know, where Before Him Seldom Seen, but he took a hiatus there for a year or two, and that kind of takes me into the notes that you include on the album, kind of the sagas, I call them, of John's mandolins. Can you tell us a bit about how the duck came to be?
Yes, sure. At the end of Congelman days, I guess it was the spring of 1969, his F-12 mandolin got stolen. So when he was finishing up, the gentleman, he had to borrow one. and he didn't have a mandolin when he was retired from music.
Mm-hmm.
And when 71, the seldom scene started in 71, he decided, okay, I'll make one myself, because he was working as a luthier or guitar repair man during the time he was not playing, and he created this very strange looking mandolin. We call it a duck, Duffy's duck. It has two points up and down, and it looks like duck is trying to fly out. And that shows you how original he had to have everything original, unique.
Mm-hmm.
He was different from anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That mandolin, the duck, was, everybody wanted to see it because it's so unique and it sounded great. And people always ask me, how did the duck sound? And I have said, well, if you had heard the solemn scene, you had heard it, because like tunes like Wait a Minute, Rider, City of New Orleans, these are all recorded with a duck mandolin.
Mm-hmm.
In 1974, the Gibson F-12 that was stolen came back, and he played both of them. He liked the sound of the duck better,
mm-hmm.
but Gibson had a wider neck, so he picked the Gibson the rest of his life.
Wow. Well, the songs on here, I spent some time listening to this week, and I mean, they're songs everyone knows if they've been listening to bluegrass for any time at all. But there's some very special songs on the album with some legendary folks who are contributing on them. How tough was it for you and Ronnie in choosing the songs to be on this project?
Ronnie was an engineer, so he was basically an engineer.
Okay.
And I was on the music side, but both of us got together and talked and argued who we should pick, or what songs to pick. And in a way, it was a lot of fun. It was like, we were trying to pick a dream team.
Yeah.
And we say, okay, we want this guitar player with this mandolin player and this person singing. You know, we just came up with wild, wild idea, combination of people we had never heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes, like, we wanted Bill Emerson to play If I Were a Carpenter, because he's the one who recorded first with John Duffy.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense to have Bill Emerson on there. And then we tried to get these people into the studio, and sometimes it worked. Well, most of the time it worked. Sometimes it didn't work. You know, it was a little disappointing, but we misjudged. Anyway, that was one of the fun parts we had.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned at the top of the interview, I'm talking to Akira Otsuka, the producer of Epilogue, a tribute to John Duffy here. And I was looking at the song list, and as you mentioned earlier in the interview, it's been a project for, you know, like 15 years. So I noticed, first of all, I noticed the dedication of the album in memory, of course, of Ronnie and Dick, but of John and Nancy, of course, too, Mike Aldridge and James King. And you know, when I first looked, I looked at the song list before I looked at all of the liner notes, and
mm-hmm.
and I noted that James King is singing on Going to the Races on this album. So I guess that's just when it happens over that much time, these sort of things sometimes happen. But I thought that was really interesting, some of the folks that are on here, like Amanda Smith and James King and Steve Gulley. These folks, some of these recordings were done earlier than others, I'm guessing.
Yes. Most of them were done in 2003, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
But Ronnie was sick on and off for more than 10 years. So that's why it took a long time for us to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say we just had a great time doing it.
Well, it's a terrific album and worth the time and the wait. It's just any folks who are fans of John, of Seldom Seen, of Country Gentlemen, I mean, this is going to be something they're going to want to have, I'm sure. I know I do.
thank you.
Tell me a bit about track 17. That is an original by you.
Yes.
And that, tell me about how that song came about.
Okay. I wrote the tune a long time ago. Maybe like 10 years ago. And I put it on my solo album called First Tear that came out about 6 years ago. And I closed that album with that tune also. And when I was doing this epilogue album, I'm like, I need something to close the CD. And also, this first tier is by mandolin by itself. So you get to hear 100% of the mandolin.
Mm-hmm.
If you have four or five people playing, then you only hear 1/5 or 1/6 of the instrument. And I wanted audience to hear how good that mandolin sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I decided to put that tune again on this album.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you playing your mandolin on that song, on the album?
Listen, now I own it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also own a duck number 2 that John built.
There was a duck number 2?
Yes.
Well, how did you know that?
John made only 2.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few other ducks, but they are not for real.
They're not real John Duffy ducks.
People loved John, and they want to make a duck mandolin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Well, is there anything else that you want to tell me? Maybe a song or two on here that particularly extra special for you to have included on this project?
We wanted to release Christmas Time Back Home last year, but it just didn't work out. So much paperwork and a lot of work. But that song, we have, first verse is sung by Randy Waller. He sings just like Charlie Waller.
Mm-hmm.
And second half is sung by Jimmy Goodrow. And joined by Eddie Aricock on baritone and Tom Gray on bass vocal. So in a way, that's Country Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Second verse was sung by John Stalling and Lou Reed. Two members of current and past members of the Seldom Seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike Aldrich and Phil Rosenthal joined on the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And third verse is sung by Jonathan Edwards and Dudley Connell. And 29 people, I think, joined on the chorus. And, you know, I just thought it would be a good thing for everybody to sing.
Yeah.
The chorus together and just wave at John.
Yeah, I was just looking at this. This is a who's who of the credits on this song in the liner notes. All the folks who contributed on Christmas Time Back Home. That's a big group of people and a lot of talent. I don't know how you corralled all that talent, you know, and got them all to do everything.
We didn't record at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was one by one.
Okay, so the magic of overdubbing.
Yes.
Well, that is terrific. Well,
thank you very much.
Akira, I kept seeing the press on this, and we were looking so forward to having the album, and glad to have it, and glad to feature it on the radio, and so thankful to you and Smithsonian Folkways for you know, making this album possible for us to have, and all of this great memory of the work of John Duffy.
you know, everybody loved John. So as a producer, co-producer, it was a very easy job to ask people, hey, I want you to be on this album. They go, oh, for John Duffy? Sure, I'd be happy to. Another thing is, these people know what to play or what to sing. It was an easy job for me because I didn't have to tell them what to do.
Right. Well, it sounds wonderful. The songs are great. The songs everyone knows can sing along to. And just the talent is immense on this album. So thank you for 15,
thank you very much.
15 years of work and a great album and for remembering John that way. And I know you miss him. He was a good friend.
Yes, he was.
Well, Akira, thanks so much for talking with me here. And look forward to playing this album for years to come.
Great. Thank you very much for having me, Joe.